This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Donald Trump gave his first address to a joint session of Congress on Wednesday night, sounding more scripted and grammatically correct than he has done in a long time. He began by warning lawmakers that he would be delivering, quote, a message of unity and strength, only to trot out family members of those killed by undocumented immigrants as a way to justify his crackdown on all immigrants. Trump boasted about calling for, quote, one of the largest increases in national defense spending in American history, and then went on to assert that America is better off when there is less conflict, not more, and that, quote, war and the destruction have ravaged and raged throughout the world. He made no mention of Social Security and Medicare, but did denounce the, quote, imploding Obamacare disaster. Some critics offered praise, saying that for the first time, Trump appeared presidential. But beyond the style, did the substance of his vision remain as dangerous as it has been? My guest is Richard Askow. He is the host of The Zero Hour, a weekly radio program, and a senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. He's a former consultant and public policy advisor, and his writings have appeared in a number of print and digital publications. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Great to be here, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's review for our audience with some of the highlights of the speech that Trump gave on Wednesday night. Here is a series of excerpts put together by CNN from the speech.
While we may be a nation divided on policies, we are a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil. I am here tonight to deliver a message of unity and strength, and it is a message deeply delivered from my heart. A new national pride is sweeping across our nation, and a new surge of optimism is placing impossible dreams firmly within our grasp. We are also taking strong measures to protect our nation from radical Islamic terrorism. So I am calling on all Democrats and Republicans in Congress to work with us to save Americans from this imploding Obamacare disaster. We will soon begin the construction of a great, great wall along our southern border. Ryan died as he lived, a warrior and a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless the United States.
And that's Donald Trump on Wednesday night, giving his first address to a joint session of Congress. In future years, it'll be simply called the State of the Union Address. But the first time a president gives such an address, it's simply called an address to the joint session of Congress because he hasn't had a chance to preside over much of a state yet. So my guest, Richard Askow, joins me now to discuss what took place Wednesday night. First of all, let's get the issue of style out of the way before we get into substance. Yes, certainly Trump seems to have finally hired a speechwriter. Should we be making a big deal of that?
No, I don't think so. Look, I mean, he set the bar so low with his campaign and then with his inaugural speech that I think a lot of the media were thrilled and grateful that he didn't declare the end of days and call down hellfire on the world's enemies. You know, the fact is that this was almost this from a presidential looking standpoint, this was almost like a trick-or-treating child. He looked like a president the way a trick-or-treater looks like a cowboy or Princess Leia, you know. But the bar has been set so low. He is so unpopular compared to previous presidents. He's done so badly in terms of acceptability to the media in previous speeches that they were just thrilled that he pretended to be points at uplifting at points. And of course, as we heard in that clip, we know he was uplifting because he told us so. He said, oh, I'm going to speak to you wonderful words from the heart or whatever he said. The fact is, this was not a great speech. It was not a presidential speech in the term that, you know, historically we think of it. And on substance, it was the same old Trump, right, and the same old Republicanism.
Right. I mean, if we actually judged him by the standards that previous presidents are judged by, it might be completely different. So, yes, he said he was going to, he opened up saying that he was going to deliver a message of unity and strength. He denounced, you know, the issues of division. And you know, if anything, his campaign and his short presidential tenure have been all about division. He said, we must not drive the wedge of disunity. And it's really, it's what it is, division. It's unadulterated division. That in that case, he was talking about critiques of law enforcement and police officers. But then, of course, his speech focused on, as we just heard, building a great, beautiful wall. What is a wall except for division?
Right. What is a special unit with the dystopian name Voice, which he also promised in this speech to provide, that singles out the victims of immigrant crimes, even though immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than other people in this country? What is that if not sowing division and fear and all those things? Look, the press and other people are acting grateful because he said it's bad to desecrate cemeteries based on the religions of the deceased. You know, that's how low the standard has gotten.
Right. The office that you mentioned, Voice, stands for Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement. And studies have shown time and again that immigrants in this country commit fewer crimes per capita than native-born citizens. And that even sanctuary cities are safer than those that are not sanctuary cities. Let's talk about the fact that he did bring up the Kansas shooting. We had covered this horrific story last week when an Indian engineer who had been working in the U.S. on a work visa as a tech worker was shot by a Navy veteran, 51-year-old white man, saying, "Get out of my country." And Trump, for the first time, finally mentioned it. All he said was, "Recent threats targeting Jewish community centers and vandalism of Jewish cemeteries, as well as last week's shooting in Kansas City, remind us that while we may be a nation divided on policies, we're a country that stands united in condemning hate and evil in all of its very ugly forms." Isn't he the one sowing the division?
Well, of course he is. And he immediately went on to terrify people about all the horrible things immigrants are going to do, which is going to inevitably lead to more crimes of this kind. And, you know, it's striking to me. This is a guy who made a big deal of the fact that President Obama wouldn't use the phrase radical Islamic terrorism. Mm. And yet this is a guy who won't say extremist white terrorism. This is a guy who won't say extremist white terrorism. Nationalist murders, which is what happened in Kansas City last week. He just called it a shooting. So, you know, this is a guy who's really talking out of both sides of his mouth, and people ought to stop congratulating him for it.
Let's talk about the critique of Obamacare. Now, Trump campaigned on repealing Obamacare. His party made it their sole purpose, you know, for existence over the last eight or so years to undermine Obamacare. And then when push came to shove, the party and him realized healthcare might be a little bit more complicated than we imagined, but he has not backed off. Initially, we had heard reports saying that Trump would wait until next year to repeal and replace Obamacare, as he has said. What did you make of what he said on Wednesday night about Obamacare?
Well, you know, it's interesting because Trump, the maverick, supposedly, who broke with the Republican Party on certain issues, and healthcare was one of them, you know, every American should be able to get healthcare and all that. He's now talking like a standard corporate bought and paid for Republican. He used the word access, that every American has access to healthcare. Well, as Bernie Sanders said, and I was Bernie's writer in the campaign, but as Bernie said, you know, we all have access to a yacht. We just can't afford it. The fact, you know, but that's a very calculated word. He hired a guy for Health and Human Services, Tom Price, who wants to eliminate Medicare and doesn't care if healthcare is available to all Americans. It won't be. He's using the language of Republicans who want to not only destroy Obamacare, but want to destroy Medicare, and certainly don't want Medicare for all.
And we should also remember Democrats loved to use that term access to healthcare as well. Universal coverage rather than the right to healthcare. You know, there's a difference between insurance and actually getting healthcare. There's a difference between access to healthcare and being able to afford healthcare. And all of these sort of interesting rhetorical flourishes obscure the fact that healthcare is a human right. Now, he faces a conundrum in that a majority of his supporters rely on the Affordable Care Act. In their mind, the Affordable Care Act is different from Obamacare, but we've seen that red states that voted overwhelmingly for Trump have taken a lot of the greatest advantage of the Affordable Care Act. So how is he going to manage this balancing act?
Well, I guess the answer is very carefully. He's going to have to he's very interested. He's in the camp now with Mike Pence and Tom Price as Health and Human Services Secretary, and Paul Ryan, who's also got voodoo, crazy, I shouldn't use that word, but crazy, superstitious ideas about how the economy works. He's in with those guys. He is, so now he's the sales guy. That's the best way, I think, to look at Trump and the rest of the Republicans. He's a sales guy who tries to make it look like, no, it'll be okay. You'll have health care. You'll have Social Security. But behind the scenes, he's going to be working to destroy those things. And I don't think his goals at this point are any different than theirs are. And I think he was telegraphing that last night between the lines.
Let's talk about the Democrats, because it's very important, of course, that the critique of Trump be accompanied by a critique of the Democrats. The biggest reason that he is in office today is because the Democrats failed to offer a competing vision. Nancy Pelosi got into a spat with Trump ahead of the congressional address. He basically critiqued the Democratic Party, saying it's failed. He said, I like the idea of a two-party system, but we might as well, start moving towards a one-party system because the Democrats have failed so badly. And, in a way, he's right. The Democrats have failed. And it seems as though Nancy Pelosi's only response in the most, public way was to show up wearing all white and encourage other women in the room to wear all white to bring up women's rights and images of the suffragettes. What did you make of that?
Well, I think that, we all agree that the politics of identity is critically important, but there's a faction in the Democratic Party. And by the way, it's inseparable from economic justice, which is, and the Democrats, first of all, they've always trailed on issues of equality. They were late to acknowledge marriage equality. They've been late. They haven't done nearly enough about gender inequalities. They certainly haven't done enough about mass incarceration and the Clinton administration's role in that and all of those things. But they always bring that up when economic issues are on the table. It's almost as if they want to change the subject. And to me, the flaw in the Democratic Party approach was exemplified by the fact that they had the response to Trump given by Steve Beshear, who is a former governor of Kentucky, Democrat, who immediately started off, first of all, said nothing about equality on race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, or anything else, ethnicity. But he also began by the policy portion of his talk by bragging that, quote, he had been fiscally responsible, had balanced our budget and turned deficits into surpluses without raising taxes. Look, people across this country and across all lines of identity are hurting economically right now. They don't care about balancing a budget, and they shouldn't care about balancing a budget because that's process stuff. Democrats or somebody ought to be talking to the American people about jobs, about wages, about an economy that works for everyone. And instead, they're still stuck in this world where they're using symbolism and they're talking about process as if anybody cares or as if in the real world economy it even mattered.
In fact, wasn't that a major Republican talking point about balancing the budget? And, this was something that the Republicans were obsessed with and progressives were pointing out that a government deficit, if it's going to actually go towards helping people, will in the end stimulate the economy. We shouldn't worry as much about a deficit.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, we issue our own currency. You know, on the Bernie campaign, our economists did a great job on that in researching that issue. The fact is that it's not what we need to be worried about at all. And by the way, the government can borrow money at incredibly low prices right now, virtually being paid to borrow money. Now, that may change under Trump, but the fact is that's not what we need to be worried about now. We need to grow the economy, we need to prime the pump, and we need to rescue millions of human beings. Millions upon millions of human beings who are suffering. That's what Democrats should be talking about. Instead, they're still focused on this process stuff. No wonder people, Democratic voters stay home, Republican voters vote for people like Trump. No wonder, because they're not being given an alternative vision of what this country could be if we were willing to make it something different.
Now, on the issue of jobs, which, of course, most Americans are most worried about, rightly so, what did Trump say in his congressional address about infrastructure building, you know, which would be a wonderful way to fix, the failing infrastructure in the country and create jobs for Americans?
Well, you know, Trump during the campaign promised $1 trillion in infrastructure spending, which was the Bernie Sanders number. And it was, as opposed to, you know, Clinton's, which was, I think, a quarter of that amount. And it's more than we got after the 2008 crisis. Now, all of a sudden, what he said last night was $1 trillion investment in the infrastructure of the United States, financed through public and private capital. You see, with these guys, you got to read the fine print. There is the fine print. What he's really saying is we're going to issue bonds, we're going to create a bonanza for Wall Street, we're going to privatize and sell off the people's resources like bridges and dams and the federal highway system, that we're going to sell that all off to the private sector so that they can overcharge you to use what was previously free. We've seen this fail in a number of states already. And Wall Street's going to make billions of dollars on it. It's going to be a big giveaway to corporations of Wall Street.
So instead of having a government program, like we did see under Obama, infrastructure building, maybe to not as great an extent as we needed, Trump is basically going to, we might have to cross the Wells Fargo Bridge and pay a dollar every time we use it. And the workers who work on that bridge, won't have the right to a union and won't get paid as well, won't be paid for overtime. I mean, that's the vision, right?
Sure it is. And I mean, Chicago, where they privatized their parking meters, and when the mayor tried to say it's a holiday, let's have alternate side of the street parking and park for free, the company said, no, you can't do that. They actually gave away their sovereign authority as a city. That's what we're seeing. That's what we'll see under Trump. Wow. And by the way, Obama's stimulus program was extremely tepid. It was far less than was needed. And a lot of it, what we really need is what Dwight Eisenhower, a Republican, did in the 1950s in building the federal highway system, what FDR did in the 1930s. And he's not going to do that.
One of the other things that Trump did during his speech, which according to Van Jones made him seem extremely presidential, was to bring up the death of a Navy SEAL that happened in Yemen literally days into Trump's presidency, when over dinner Trump approved a plan for a ground attack, a raid that had been planned under Obama and ended up killing dozens of ordinary Yemeni civilians, including children, including an 8-year-old U.S. civilian, U.S. citizen girl. But it also, of course, most importantly, from an American perspective, and I put that in quotes, a U.S. Military person was killed. Now, this young man's widow was at the, was there as a guest, which basically means was there as a prop for Trump.
Right.
But the dead man's father has blamed Trump. Trump blames the military. Mm-hmm. What was this all about? It was just sort of glossed over by the media.
Well, it wasn't just glossed over by the media. It was praised by the media. You know, it's the most breathtakingly cynical. First of all, Democrats don't have a strong position to condemn him on this, because Obama authorized hundreds and hundreds of these raids, these drone attacks and other extrajudicial killings of American citizens and everything else. So they don't deserve praise on this issue. But the idea that, look, I grieve for the widow, I grieve for the father, we all do. But the cynical exploitation of the victims of U.S. military policy, unfortunately, has become a ritual at presidential addresses to Congress. And instead of praising it, commentators, especially, you know, people who are on the progressive side of the ledger, should be calling it out for what it is, which is fetishization of military sacrifice instead of respecting military sacrifice and human loss.
So the other and of course, we don't really hear too much about the contradiction that Trump made in promising the greatest increase to military spending, ever, and then turning around and saying, but there's too much war and that the U.S. is going to, you know, pull back. I mean, is this consistent to offer a vision of an isolationist country militarily, which of course is a good thing, and then boosting the military by this much?
Well, look, this is a guy who, again, this is where underneath all the fireworks and colorful stuff, this is a guy who in many ways is a boilerplate Republican. Republicans always want to increase the military budget, and they always claim they want to reduce the number of wars. The Democrats historically have also increased it, but at a slower rate, which Republicans turn around and will call a cut. So, look, this is just, again, underneath all the showiness, this is just standard Republican stuff. And let's not forget the military-industrial complex, which is now the military-industrial national security complex, still has huge power in Washington, D.C. And to the extent that Trump strayed from the party line at all, I think they've brought him in line.
Okay, so let's talk about what was not brought up, which is Social Security and Medicare. The Republicans have for years said that they want to take aim at those cuts, renaming them entitlements rather than, you know, a tax-funded initiative, which is what it is. And even Democrats had been willing to concede to some modest cuts, but Trump, perhaps knowing that his base heavily relies on these government social safety net programs, seems to be not wanting to address it. What do you think is going on there?
Well, Trump, of course, stood out for most of the Republican primary as the only Republican. Mike Huckabee was a minor character, but essentially the only Republican candidate who said, I will not cut Social Security or Medicare. It was critical to his winning the nomination. It was critical to his winning the election. He repeated it once he became president. And by the way, those of us who worked in that policy area call them earned benefits because we earn them through our own contributions.
That is a really good framing for it.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden his people have been working, meaning the Republicans, they're getting him to heel on this one too, because all of a sudden in the last couple of days, his people say, well, there won't be cuts in the budget he brings out, but they're not going to rule it out. So I expect a kind of ritual coming up pretty soon where he regretfully compromises on that issue. It was telling to me that he didn't say anything about Social Security or Medicare last night. What it was telling me is that the Republican operatives are bringing him in line and he's going along with it. And I'm worried about my Social Security and my Medicare and yours.
Right. Bernie Sanders gave a video response to the Trump speech, and it seems as though that should have been the speech given by a Democrat if Democrats have any chance of actually becoming a real opposition party and not dying in obsolescence. Why is this party so unwilling to take its place as a real opposition party, picking Thomas Perez to head the DNC rather than Keith Ellison, et cetera?
Well, I think it was Disraeli who said in the gender bias language of his time that you cannot teach a man something if it's in his self-interest not to learn it. I suspect that has a lot to do with it. And I suspect that the desire to keep the corporate donations flowing has a lot to do with it, although Bernie's campaign showed, you know, $228 million raised in small donations, no corporate donors, no billionaire donors. It can be done, but I don't think they want to do the hard work. I think that's why they rejected Keith Ellison, because Keith's approach was, let's get a lot of people to contribute a lot of money, and that becomes part of your grassroots organizing for activism and votes and everything else. That's not the vision the Democratic Party has, and I don't think they want to change their stripes economically either, because remember, a lot of these guys go on from their political lives to very nice jobs at hedge funds and on the boards of large corporations and stuff. You don't want to spoil that by being too lefty. So we need new Democrats if the Democrats are going to be a real opposition party.
Right. I mean, and that's such an important aspect of the critique, which we don't hear much about. And of course, Republicans do the same thing, which is why Trump, after saying he was going to drain the swamp, only then filled it. And it's now overflowing with lobbyists and corporate interests, corporate CEOs with zero government experience. Finally, I want to ask you if you think that in many ways, Trump saw what Sanders had traction with among the American public and used the same sort of rhetoric with a right-wing stamp on it to gain traction and to win power. You write in a piece that you just published critiquing the speech that Trump gave, that he offered a nation of miracles. So he knows how to speak in these grand visionary terms that the Democrats fail at so badly. Will his base hold him accountable for this, you know, for these grand promises that he's making? In some ways, his promises are even grander than Sanders's.
Well, you know, yeah, I don't think Bernie ever promised a nation of miracles. But look, you know, it's first of all, yes, he absolutely, I wish you could copyright political rhetoric, because he stole so much of it from Bernie, from the game is rigged to, you know, the $1 trillion in infrastructure to a million things he said that came from Bernie. The tone came from Bernie. As far as what will his base hold him accountable, you know, it's pay no attention to the man behind the curtain, right? You know, I mean, the question is, can he keep up the flim-flam and the scamming for 4 years and without a smart opposition party to hold him accountable, he may be able to do just that. The question is, will somebody come up and hold him accountable?
Right. Well, I want to thank you so much, Richard, for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article on our website. What's the best place to read your works in general?
Oh, probably ourfuture.org, O-R-G, or thisisthezerohour.com for the radio broadcast.
And we'll put those links up on our site. Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you.
My guest is Richard Eskow. He is the host of the Zero Hour weekly radio program. He's also a senior fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and we're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RUwithSonali.